There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
The Rob Brown Show back on your radio. It's the Fan Upstate. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo, and you. Be a part of the radio broadcast, 844-326-3663. That's the number to call the show. That's the number to text the show. Where are you falling on this B1G SEC evening? You know, I'm kind of curious,
honestly. You probably shouldn't say, where are you falling with, you know, the ice and stuff on, you know, the ground outside.
Slip sliding away.
Wow.
Slip sliding away. Where do you land after you fall on this B1G SEC joint meeting, a.k.a. merger? Because do you know how much easier all of this, how much easier it is to comprehend, to understand? Think about it in business terms instead of football. When you think about it in sports terms, it creates this world where our passion and our love of the game becomes our primary driving motivator to think about it. But if you use, you know, feelings, emotion, passion, love to talk about it, then none of it's going to make sense. You're going to go, this is all bad for football. If you think about it from the perspective of a business, if you imagine Tony Petitti in a Hugo Boss suit giving a presentation, instead of, as a guy who really loves the Big Ten, if you look at him as a guy who cares about the bottom dollar, the profit margins for his investors, more than a guy who cares about football in his conference, a lot of this will make a lot more sense to you.
See, I just think of it in terms of the NFL. You know, before there was the NFL, there were two professional football leagues that got together, and now we have the NFL.
And I do think that that is kind of what I was driving at earlier, is I do think this merger ultimately ends with there being two separate college football landscapes that interact with each other in order to decide a national champion, and everybody else unfortunate enough to get locked out of those two leagues basically is either going to have to play a different college football world, maybe under the NCAA banner still, and maybe not, or a lot of schools are just not going to have football programs anymore. We'll come back to that later, because there is something else happening in the ACC that kind of tells me that my fear that the actual ruination of college football does not come from NIL, does not come from the portal, It comes from this merger, from the SEC-Big Ten merger. That's the big threat to college football. We'll circle back around to that a little bit later on in the radio broadcast. But it is 7:03 in the morning. You have 56 minutes and 20 seconds until you have got to be sat at your desk, log in, get those emails fired off, check off your morning task for the AM, and then take that first break around, I don't know, what do you think, 8:08 a.m.? Walk down the hallway, head to the water cooler, chat it up with Mike from Accounts Receivable. Big sports guy down there, Mike. And if you're going to talk with Mike about, so you don't want to embarrass yourself. You want to know what's going on in the world of sports. And if that's the case, you need this. It's the Water Cooler Cheat Sheet, the top three sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office this upstate Wednesday morning and talk sports with your coworkers. I had to make sure it was working. It is. Item number one. The Major League Baseball Hall of Fame has named its class of 2025. It is a three-man class. Billy Wagner, the closer, CC Sabathia, the starting pitcher, and Ichiro Suzuki have all been elected to the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. And we'll talk about all of them collectively a little later in the show. But the news for me in this story, and this is going to be a segment coming up a little bit later on. The news for me is that if you are a baseball fan and you do not think that Ichiro Suzuki is a Hall of Famer, then allow me to break out the classic cliche. You don't know ball, brother. You don't know ball. Ichiro Suzuki is the definition of a Hall of Famer. He becomes the first Japanese-born Major League Baseball Hall of Famer. The dude had 3,089 career hits as a professional. He had 2,542 career hits as a member of the Seattle Mariners. He had over 1,275 hits in the Nippon Professional Baseball League in Japan. That gives him a career total of more overall hits than Pete Rose. He is the definition of a Major League Baseball Hall of Famer. Ichiro Suzuki passes what I think is maybe the most contentious aspect of the Hall of Fame, the character clause. You must not just be a great player, must be also a wonderful representative of and ambassador for the game of baseball out in the real world. You have never heard a story of Ichiro Suzuki being anything other than an absolute bro his entire career. Ichiro Suzuki's number is being retired on August 9th. He will become just the third Seattle Mariner to have his jersey retired, joining Edgar Martinez and Ken Griffey Jr. Two-time American League batting champion, 10-time All-Star and Gold Glove outfielder, a career 311 average, 117 home runs, 780 RBIs, 509 stolen bases between the Mariners, Yankees, and Marlins. Why do I say all these things about Ichiro Suzuki? Very simple. Because Ichiro Suzuki got 393 votes out of 394 voters. Somewhere in America is one egg-headed jackass with a vote that said, I'm not voting for Ichiro Suzuki. And I want it known that the day that this cat gets doxxed, and I don't think you've ever heard me say this or anything close to it on the radio, whoever he writes for should fire him immediately. Anybody who finds out who he is once he is fired should never hire him again.
So you want this guy to conform and follow what everyone else is doing, even though he may have the opinion that...
There is no argument that Ichiro Suzuki's not a Hall of Famer. If you say he's not, you are not a good baseball person. That's just a fact.
Okay, but they have a vote and you don't. And if they decide that's what it is, I mean, you know...
Ichiro Suzuki had an opportunity to become the second unanimous selection in Major League Baseball's Hall of Fame. There is only one other player who has become unanimous, and that's Mariano Rivera in the class of 2019. There is zero reason, zero, that Ichiro Suzuki is not number two. This guy has more career hits as a professional than Pete Rose. This guy has a landmark legacy. I don't care about any of the other aspects. Just as a baseball player, pretty good. The guy won the Gold Glove multiple times. He was a 10-time All-Star. He was the 2001 Rookie of the Year and the MVP in the baseball MVP. In the same year, he was on a team that had 116 regular season wins, tied for the most of all time, and the play never backed off. This dude is a definitive Hall of Famer. And the only reason that you do not vote for Ichiro Suzuki as a Hall of Famer is one of two reasons. Number one, you don't know ball, brother, in which case you shouldn't be writing about it to the point that you have a vote in this. If you genuinely don't see him as a Hall of Famer, you should not have a Hall of Fame vote. And number two, the only other reason you would not put Ichiro Suzuki in the Hall of Fame is because you are being a contrarian and you sit at home at night and touch yourself to everybody being ticked off online like me. That's it. There are some people, we call them trolls, that get their rocks off by making people angry intentionally. Hell, some people have made a whole career out of it. If you were the one guy that kept Ichiro from being consensus Hall of Famer number two, you should have your vote revoked, and you should never cover baseball again. I've never said anything like that before. I'll say it now. That's a joke. That's a joke that this dude isn't the consensus. All right, item number two. Your final AP poll of the year in college football has dropped. And, of course, the Ohio State Buckeyes end the year as the consensus number one overall. The Notre Dame Fighting Irish end at number two. Where did everybody else that got bounced before the Natty end up? Well, here you go. The Oregon Ducks check in at number three at 13-1, one spot ahead of the Texas Longhorns, and the Penn State Nittany Lions end up at number five. Georgia checks in at six ahead of seven Arizona State. Boise State ends at number eight ahead of Tennessee at number nine, and Indiana rounds out the top 10. Ole Miss is at number 11. SMU 12 ahead of BYU 13. Clemson will finish the year as a top 15 team, checking in at number 14, one spot ahead of the Iowa State Cyclones. Illinois 16, Alabama 17, Miami 18, South Carolina 19, two spots behind the University of Alabama. South Carolina 19, the top 25 rounds out with Syracuse, Army, Mizzou, UNLV, Memphis, and Colorado bouncing in, get to claim an AP top 25 finish to the season. No real shock anywhere as far as how the conferences stand out. Seven SEC teams at number 4, 6, 9, 11, 17, 19, and 22. Five teams out of the Big Ten, numbers 1, 3, 5, 10, and 16. The ACC slotted four teams, however, none in the top 10. They claim numbers 12, 14, 18, and 20. The Big 12 got four in at 7, 13, 15, and 25. The AAC two teams at 21 and 24. The Mountain West, two teams at 8 and 23. And of course, Notre Dame is the lone independent in the top 25 at number two. And very quickly, because we've already spent quite a bit of time on it this morning, item number three. Ross Dellinger of Yahoo Sports is reporting that on February 19th in the greatest city in America, New Orleans, Louisiana, the Big Ten and SEC Conference Athletic Departments will hold a joint meeting with just those two conferences in attendance. What is the point of this meeting? The point of the meeting is to get the two conferences in lockstep with each other before the College Football Playoff Committee meeting, which takes place a week later in Dallas, Texas. The goal of this meeting is to make sure that these two conferences, who have already outright said, hey, dig it, we believe that when it comes to the College Football Playoffs, we got the power. Bam. Bow, 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 bow. We say what goes. We say how it goes. Now, the reason this one is interesting is because if there are to be any changes to the 2025 college football playoff format, they would have to be voted upon by a majority of the athletic directors in the College Football Playoff Committee. If there are to be changes in 2026, it will require a consensus of everybody in the CFP room. My suspicion, although Ross Dellinger says he believes it is unlikely that any changes will be made ahead of 2025, my belief is that the SEC and the Big Ten Conference commissioners are going to sit in the room and they're going to say, is there anything wildly pressing to us now? There might be, there might not be. Off the top of my head, I don't know what would make that cut. But the thought is they will sit in the room, they will have these conversations, they will say, we think it is important that X happens. We think it is important that Y happens. And if we can come to a consensus on this, if we can reach an agreement, then we can go to Dallas next week and we can start to shove those changes onto the table. And if we can get those discussed, then we, as the two power conferences with all of the, you know, money and power, we believe that we will be able to get these changes enacted for next year. Will they? I don't know. One of the things that I do think, and this is where we get to start playing the Game of Thrones college football edition, one of the things they have to be very careful about is not to ram anything through this year that creates any sort of grudge with any of the athletic directors from other conferences. Because again, as we mentioned, next year for changes to the 2026 playoffs, the College Football Playoff Committee will require a consensus among everyone in the room. And so if the Big Ten and the SEC go in there this year and they start throwing their weight around and bullying the other conferences into agreeing with changes they want to see in 2025, there is the comeuppance down the line of in 2025's meetings next year, 2026 meetings next year, those same commissioners, when the SEC and Big Ten propose whatever model they want to go with next, all it would take is one person in the room to go, hey, you know what, guys? You. We ain't changing nothing. The SEC, the Big Ten, you. And say no. And then they bog down whatever changes. So I don't think there's going to be any big-time sweeping changes that come out of this meeting. I don't believe that there will be no changes that come out of this meeting when these two teams, two conferences get in lockstep with each other February 19th and then present whatever they agree upon a week later in Dallas. All right, let's take a break. Come back, talk some NFL on the show. The ACC has proposed a change to their conference championship game that I think lends credence to what I said in the last segment of the show, that the biggest threat to college football is the SEC-Big Ten merger. I'll tell you what I mean when we come back on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. Real good, Corey LaJoy. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. The Rob Brown Show's on your radio. It's the Fan Upstate. How do you do? Great to be with you. We've been talking this morning so far, and likely will continue to, because I think it is the next big step in college football's evolution. We'll have Denton Day of SiriusXM's College Football Overtime joining us here in the next segment of the radio program. And we'll ask him the same question and have the conversation with the brilliant football mind that is Denton Day. I've said a couple of times so far this morning, I believe the biggest threat to college football is not NIL, is not the transfer portal. And I make that observation by saying, did we not enjoy the college football playoffs this year?
Some of us really enjoyed it.
I know you did. Yeah. I know you did. But even if you're not a horse chestnut, did you not enjoy the college? I thought it was good. Will we have better years? Yes. We will have better years. Not every year is going to be.
What do you mean by better?
Well, I'm going to tell you. What I mean by better is we will have years where the first round isn't four ass whoopings. We will have better years where the second round features at most two competitive games. Realistically, a competitive game in round two. Effectively, the playoffs were the semifinals. Now, before any of you go, well, we could have stayed at four. No, you couldn't, because remember, the semifinals were made up of teams 5, 6, 7, and 8, not 1, 2, 3, and 4. It is likely if we were in a 14 playoff, Ryan Day and the Buckeyes would not have been playing for a national championship this year.
First, we'll see. Obviously, the sample size is just 1 year. I don't believe the first round is going to get any better.
Maybe
ever.
Not. I think, again, much like we anticipated when it started, I've already said, I do think that probably 80%+ of first-round games are going to be whoopings. Not only is it a team that is closer to the top playing a team that's not, but the closer to the top team gets to play it on their campus. Yeah, I believe the overwhelming majority of first-round games are going to look like they did last year.
First-round games are the equivalent of play-in games in basketball.
That is also the reason I believe 12's the right number for a playoffs.
Oh, I agree too. I don't think it needs to go any higher.
I think 12's the right number for a playoff maximum. I think honestly, if you really want to cut it down, I think 8's fine. But they're never going to go back.
They're not going to go back. The only thing I think they really need to tweak is the length of time between games.
So we're going to talk about that, because that's a conversation Cody Decker and I had on Saturday on Bet for the Cycle on the BetQL Network, which made its way to his nationally syndicated Beadle and Decker on SiriusXM. And I want to bring that up because Deck and I had that conversation and we landed on opposite sides of it. He and Beadle had the conversation and they agree with each other, and we're going to have that talk a little later in the show. Yada, 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 yada. I wanted to bring up this topic. My brain just shut off for a second there. I wanted to bring up this topic.
I was heading for the paddles, man. I think they're still here somewhere.
You ever had that? Like, you know where you're going,
You see that happen to me all the time. So
I wanted to bring this up. I said back in the first hour of the show, I genuinely believe that the biggest threat to college football is not NIL, it's not the transfer portal, it's not coaches leaving and moving up to bigger schools and better jobs, it's none of that. The biggest threat to college football, in my opinion, is this Big Ten SEC merger. It is the creation of a college football monopoly, right? I've said before, and maybe not time and place, I don't really care. The inevitable conclusion of unchecked and unregulated capitalism is monopoly. It's oligarchy. That is the direct result of unchecked, unregulated capitalism. I'm pro-capitalism for sure. But there have to be guardrails and regulations. Without them, you end up with every industry has one guy who's able to buy out everything else. And then they can just do whatever they want. Well, that's the Big Ten and the SEC when it comes to college football. The NCAA never grabbed itself a set of enforcement protocols. It allowed these conferences to go wherever they wanted to go, and the conclusion is a Big Ten SEC merger that, to me, threatens to basically lock everybody else out, or at least set the bar for entry so freaking high that it's just about impossible for anybody else to compete with them. How did I arrive at this conclusion? It's what the ACC is looking at doing right now. We have talked about this already. Not in as much detail as we probably need to, but we can fix that here. Jim Phillips, the commissioner of the Atlantic Coast Conference, said that his league is weighing possible changes to championship weekend, suggesting instead of a ACC championship game, that instead of an ACC championship game, they may create an ACC automatic qualifier play-in tournament. So instead of having, hey, everybody come up to Charlotte for the ACC championship game, we're going to crown an ACC champion. Instead, what we will have is, since the ACC is probably looking at, in this, 4-4-2-2-2-1+1 model, you would have two AQs to the ACC. You would have one to the best group of five champion, one at large intended for Notre Dame if it finishes ranked inside the top 14. And then four to the SEC, four to the Big Ten. So instead of having a championship game, which would more often than not, though not exclusively, result in the ACC champ getting the higher seeded at large and the ACC runners up getting the lower buy-in seed, which again creates the situation we've talked about with Oregon and Penn State, a situation where, hey, I'm in this game, I'm going either way, right? Like if I'm playing for an ACC title game, I'm going to the playoffs. And I can't have a bye. You can't get a bye. So what the hell's the point of trying? If I'm Dabo and I make the eight, no, I don't think Dabo would do this. But if I'm Clemson and I backdoor my way into the ACC title game and I'm going to get SMU, whatever, you know what I'm doing? I'm rolling out all my backups. I'm rolling out all my freshmen. I'm rolling out all my sophomores in their you know, second year, maybe don't have a ton of XP. I'm rolling out all my depth players. Why? Because I'm already going. So Jim Phillips says in order to combat that, and honestly, like, it's one of those ideas that the knee-jerk reaction is, that's dumb and stupid and I hate it. But looking at it from a reasonable standpoint, a point of reason, not emotion, and that kind of makes perfect sense. Why? A couple of reasons. Number one, if I've got, let's say, the top four teams in the ACC and they're playing for two spots, I'm seeding number one versus number four with one hosting. I'm seeding number two versus number three with two hosting. Now what do I have? Instead of the ACC championship game taking place on night in Charlotte, what do I have? I have two games to put on TV, both of them with a playoff spot on the line, both of them with a traditional college football game environment around it. Both of them, I get the profit of. It actually makes a lot of sense. But the point is not whether or not this format, with one playing four, two playing three, and the winner of those two games, each of them getting thus one of the two AQs for the ACC. The point here is that the merger between the Big Ten and the ACC, SEC, the merger between the Big Ten and the SEC is already having an impact in that a conference in the ACC fighting for its life is looking at doing away with crowning an ACC champion. There would be an ACC regular season champion, but there would be no ACC champion anymore. Not championship game champion, never regular season champ. But the ACC is looking at not crowning a conference champion because the SEC and the Big Ten say, no. You just get two spots from now on. You can maybe earn an at-large if you have a really good year, but you get two spots. So if I'm the ACC, I want to create a way where I make sure I'm sending the best two teams I got and also making sure that the games are competitive. Because if both teams in the ACC title game get a spot, neither team has to show up and try. Who cares? I don't give a darn if I'm the ACC title game, if I'm the ACC champion, if I have a title appearance on the line. A playoff appearance on the line. But if I got to go out there and I have to beat that other team to get a playoff bid, now I'm going to play. Now I'm rolling out my best. I'm going in the bag. I'm making this a game. And so are they with a playoff spot on the line. It's a good thought. The point is, this merger is creating chaos for the other conferences. We'll ask Denton Day of SiriusXM's College Football Overtime his thoughts when we come back on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Dave Musial, owner of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. With our biggest sale ever, furnaces from $39 a month, furnace and air conditioning combos from $59 a month, plus 72 months interest-free financing and up to a $4,000 system rebate. Four Seasons guaranteed to beat any competitor's price by up to $1,000 guaranteed. So call today for your free in-home estimate and same-day installation.
For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
.39 in the a.m. portion of the day. The Rob Brown Show carries on. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo, and you as we watch the snow melt in the parking lot across the street. Supposed to be a pretty nice day. What the hell is that over there, Lonzo?
Okay, you need to be a little more specific.
Is that just where a car was parked?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. They look like portals to another dimension, for sure.
It's right?
Yeah.
I'm still not a snow guy.
Okay. Don't ever need to be one.
Denton Day, you a snow guy or you a I hate this crap guy?
I was a snow guy in high school when it got me out of school.
Fair.
As an adult having to drive. I was going to ask, how are you guys handling that? Because you guys are getting a lot more snow than that area is used to getting, right? I mean, it was cold. It's cold here. We don't have snow at the moment, but it was 11 degrees.
I'm going to do that thing that causes an eye roll from a lot of people. I'm from Ohio. I'm good.
Oh, yeah, you're straight. You're like, this is nothing.
Yeah, and we didn't get as much as Florida did.
Also, Denton Day. End snow games, dome all NFL stadiums.
Stop it.
I said what I said.
Be smart financially so you can hold concerts at most of those stadiums in the winter.
It's all pluses. It's all benefits. There's no reason not to do it. Denton Day is the host of SiriusXM's College Football Overtime. He joins us on Wednesdays here on the Rob Brown Show, here on the Fan Upstate to talk a little collegiate footy. And Denton Day, I do want to talk here in just a couple of minutes about this Big Ten SEC merger because I got a bit of a take and I want to get your thought on it. But we would be remiss if we did not dive directly into your college football national championship game. 34-23, Ohio State University takes home the national championship. And what an interesting game. Notre Dame opens up with an 18-play drive that goes almost 10 minutes in time. It's the longest drive in modern era of college football national championship games. And then their next, like, four drives combined stack to, like, 5 minutes. What? That's the question, Denton Day. What?
I think that is what we call the law of averages. Things just, you know, they're just balancing out. You get a 10-minute drive where your next three are going to be three and outs in 5 minutes. You know, Riley Leonard looked gassed at the end of that one. I love when they showed him on the sideline, and I'm like, my man can't breathe. But, you know, he's a quarterback. So, like, quarterbacks don't do oxygen. Those are for the offensive linemen. Offensive linemen do oxygen. Defensive linemen do oxygen. Quarterbacks, you know, they're too braggadocious. They're not going to take some. My man needed some oxygen. He needed some oxygen. I thought that drive, though, was perfect, Rob. That was exactly what they needed to do to keep it at least somewhat watchable. Now, it got out of hand at the end of the first half and then a little bit at the beginning of the second half before they started to make their comeback, but they needed to get on top of Ohio State. You can't chase Ohio State. They just don't have, they being Notre Dame, they just don't have the amount of talent and the amount of firepower on offense to be able to do that. So that kind of drive, I mean, your best defense was keeping them, Ohio State, off of the field. So it was perfect. It just, the next three drives, as you mentioned, were less than perfect, and that kind of created a position where you could take advantage to then, oh my God, we're down a lot now.
It was interesting to me. I've watched the game live, was taking notes, did a little highlight film study the next day, yesterday. You go back and watch. I think Ohio State, if I recall correctly, didn't they, on an 18-play drive that Notre Dame opened up with, they brought pressure twice. They brought pressure twice. And when they brought pressure, it was one guy. They never had multi-man blitzes. It was like a guy. Then we got to drive number two. And granted, it was only a three-play drive. And drive number three, which was also a three and out, all of a sudden they're bringing five consistently. All of a sudden the base becomes a five-man rush. We're dropping six. I thought they did kind of what the opposite of Penn State did. Penn State was super aggressive defensively in the first half against Notre Dame. They backed off and Riley Leonard went off. On the first drive, Ohio State played back, Riley Leonard went off, and then they started throwing dudes at him and Notre Dame didn't respond. It just came became a game of, until Ohio State had a big lead, Ohio State is going to crash big dudes into your offensive line at your quarterback and try to beat you. And that's exactly what happened until Ohio State kind of backed off a little bit in the late third quarter.
Yeah, it was great coaching by Jim Knowles. There's a reason they went out and got him a couple of years ago, because the defense for so many years at Ohio State had been struggling. That was like the feeling out process, right? Like that first drive was like, all right, how is this going to go? Are we going to be able to get pressure with four? Because they'd done a really good job this year against most teams getting pressure with just four. And they were feeling them out. All right, if we can get pressure with four, we're just going to bring four. Oh, we can't do that. All right, well, we're going to adjust. We trust what we're doing on the back end, and we're going to send dudes after you. And they did. And as you mentioned, they did. And it really flustered Notre Dame's offense. And Riley Leonard is not the quickest of decision makers. And then he's not the most accurate guy. So when you're not the quickest of decision makers and you're also not accurate, it's going to lead to some struggles. And you saw that. And then as Ohio State backed off, you started to see Notre Dame come to life a little bit again. So I thought it was a great move by Jim Knowles. And then it just got a little, not scary necessarily. I don't think that anybody realistically thought that they were going to come back and win, but it was at least making you, I made someone who bet Ohio State 8.5 sweat a little bit.
Some Buckeyes clenched up a little bit. All right. Yeah, they just did. We all saw it. Denton Day from SiriusXM's College Football Overtime joining us here on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. The future of college football is predicated by this Ohio State championship win. This is a team that was built through the transfer portal. You got a transfer portal quarterback. You got a transfer portal pair of running backs. You got a transfer portal wide receiver who is a playmaker. There is some homegrown talent on this roster, but you got a lot of guys that came from other places to make up what became the 2024 Ohio State Buckeyes. Do you think that is going to kind of drive college football's evolution more towards advanced portal hunting now? Or do you think that coaches are going to kind of keep the pace and see if this becomes the trend before they overreact?
No, I think they'll keep the pace more than anything. I mean, how advanced can you get in the portal? I think that's what we're kind of starting to see a little bit, Rob. You're seeing a little bit of the balance out. Obviously, like, you look at Ohio State's offense and you say, you know, that they were great. They were really, really good. But I'm going to continue to say this championship was won on their defense. And you look at their defense, and the defense had a lot of that homegrown talent, guys that had been in the program for a long, long time. See, some guys 5 years as grad students. So I think, you know, every single year is different. It really, I've always said that the transfer portal really depends on two things, quarterbacks and defensive ends. You know, it's pretty simple, right? Like if you look at the NFL, it's a great example. Who are the highest paid guys? Quarterbacks and guys that get after the quarterback. That really is what I think kind of is going to adjust how coaches attack the portal. If there is a portal with a lot of quarterbacks entering it, you'll see them be more aggressive. If there's a lot of defensive ends entering it, they'll be more aggressive. But I don't know that what Ohio State was this year is going to cause for any sort of mass adjustment to how coaches handle the portal. I don't think so. I could be wrong. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're kind of starting to get a grip on just how to do this on a yearly basis.
Denton Day joining us here on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. Do you feel like the first annual college football expanded playoffs was a success? I thought it was. Look, first round was boring. I think no matter what you do, when you have this team, and we know what depth looks like as far as championship quality teams, I think more often than not, the first round's going to kind of be predominantly blowouts. But with a second round that had at most two competitive games, it really didn't get heated until the semifinals. Do you feel like this was a successful inaugural expanded playoffs?
It definitely was. It was definitely successful. Are there things that they need to change? Also, yes to that question, but it was definitely successful. I had a lot of fun watching it, and you got to see a lot of good games and a lot of teams that you would not ever see play one another. Texas, Arizona State, I don't think, like, I've never seen those two teams play, and you got to see them play. So I think that is why you expand, also for money, but that's why you expand, is to give fan bases matchups that you traditionally would not see. So from that standpoint, I definitely think it was a success.
I got to say, the Ohio State Buckeyes were the best team in college football down the stretch, right? Like,
yeah,
to me,
definitely.
And I think the point we have to hammer down on is if it was a 4-team playoff, they weren't in it. So if nothing else, it has proven to me that the whole concept of the best four teams, you've never known if the best four teams were the best four teams. Now we are, I think, going to be like 90% sure the best team is somewhere in that 12.
Yeah. I think it also makes the committee squirm a lot less. Like this year's a great season. Could you imagine, like in years past, Rob, we've always fantasy booked 12-team playoffs when we were only at four. Could you imagine how much the committee would have squirmed if they had to put four teams in, and who the tough decisions they would have had to make, how they really view teams? I felt like with a 12 team, it did make their life a little easier because they didn't really have to tell you that information, which they love. They love it when other people do their work for them, which in most instances is the games itself, but they hate making hard decisions. It would have been tough for them this year if it was only a 4-team playoff. And you're right, Ohio State more likely than not is on the outside looking in with two losses and no berth in the Big Ten championship game.
All right, I want to ask you, we got a few more minutes here with Denton Day from College Football Overtime on SiriusXM. February 19th, Ross Dellinger reported this yesterday. The heads, the athletic directors of the SEC and the Big Ten are going to get together in New Orleans. They are going to have a joint conversation between those two conferences, I think primarily to get on the same page about whatever it is they're going to introduce a week later at the CFP meetings over in Dallas. I said earlier in the show, and you tell me if this is fair or foul, the biggest threat to college football is not more games, it's not NIL, it's not the transfer portal. The biggest threat to college football is the SEC and the Big Ten getting on the same page and bullying everybody else into giving them everything that they want, which inevitably down the line leaves a lot of schools and programs out in the cold. Am I being a dramatic son of a gun, or is there some validity to that?
No, you're not being dramatic, because we saw a couple of years ago with the falling apart of the alliance that everyone is in it for themselves. And the Big Ten was like, hey, ACC, hey, it was the Big 12 or Pac-12, whoever it was, like, hey, guys, let's do this together. And then it was the Pac-12, because they then stole four of their teams and they completely caused that conference to fall apart. You're in this for yourself. You're in this to make money for the people that you work for, which in these instances for the commissioners is the schools that are part of their conference. So, yeah, it's a very curious approach to what this sport is going to look like based off of what we get from those meetings. Because I can tell you this, Rob, when the Big Ten and the SEC get together, I think Greg Sankey is the most powerful man in college athletics. But I can tell you this, this is not going to be like an alliance where it's a handshake deal and then one of them robs the other one. That's not how this is going to work. This is going to be like ironclad set in stone. It's two mega powers coming together. It's, if you're in the 80s, it's Hogan and it's Savage. If you're in the now, it's Cena and it's Rock coming together to figure out, do we want to be a team? Do we not want to be a team?
You're telling me there's a Big Ten heel turn on the horizon? You're telling me there's a Tony Petitti chair shot coming down the line?
Could you imagine if Greg Sankey, this genius that he is, gets fooled by the Big Ten after they duped? I mean, they Seth Rollins'd the Pac-12 and the ACC with a chair shot to the back. Could you imagine if Triple H in Greg Sankey gets the same thing? Like, it would, I can't imagine. Like, they're going to be coming into the room, I think, metaphorically, ready to go. Like, stuff in the chamber, just be like, hey, how do you, like, what we kind of talked about, how do you want this to go? We can be friends, we can be enemies. What do you want this to be? And then whatever it ends up being, they're going to be friends more likely than not because money. But then that really makes it tough for everybody else.
The SEC versus Big Ten, 30 for 30, directed by Martin Scorsese. Sign me up. Just turn it into the mobster movie at this point. Yeah, I said this earlier. Like, I think that these two conferences get on the same page. They make their demands. Because next year at the same college football playoff meeting, if they want to make changes, it has to be consensus. It has to be unanimous after that. It doesn't have to be this year. That's not to say anything will change. Ross Dellinger says he doesn't think anything will. My thought is there's going to be this fun balance to watch these two conferences walk because on one hand, they do want to go in there and throw their weight around as the two big dogs and structure this thing the way that they want it. On the flip side, they tick off the wrong guy at the wrong time, and then the 2026 meetings roll around. All it takes is one dude in the room to go, hey, Sankey, screw you. Hey, Petitti, screw you. We're not going along with that. And whatever the plans they want fall apart. Now, that's to say that there won't be another coup where they go, okay, well, then you're not part of this anymore and figure it out. But I think there's a kind of a fine line. I think when it comes down to it, though, much like Hulk Hogan, if he decides that whatever you think don't work for me, brother, you're kind of screwed.
Oh, God. I'm so happy you made that reference. This is how I know that we're on the same page, because I was about to make that don't work for me, brother reference. But you are correct in that. These are the two most powerful guys in college athletics. And I applaud whoever wants to go up against them if they do in 2026. But, like, buddy, good luck. Because they have the power to just, we'll do our own thing. You know, depending on what happens, like I'm with you. I don't think any mass change is going to take place for the next year of the college football playoff. But whatever they decide to do, they hold all the cards, because we would absolutely, as fan bases, and this is where it's on us, and I recognize I'm hypocritical because I don't want much to change, but I would absolutely, if it just becomes a joint thing between the Big Ten and the SEC, I'm still watching.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that that's wrong. Denton Day hosts the SiriusXM College Football Overtime. Joins us every Wednesday to talk college football and also worked like 14 wrestling references into one answer. So, you know, he's good people. My man, thanks for pulling up, big dog.
Fellas, appreciate it. Everybody cheer on the Commanders this weekend. And if you have Eagles fans in South Carolina, I hope you guys stub your toe.
Yeah, me too. Go Commanders.
Go Chiefs.
Denton Day from College Football Overtime. Lonzo with a sports flash.
How are you not going to mention Chiefs? The NFL head coaching will continues to spin. It is disrespect. Or in this case, stays put after a 14-3 season and disappointing wildcard round exit. The Minnesota Vikings have extended head coach Kevin O'Connell by multiple years. O'Connell considered working through the end of his contract next season, but has repeatedly expressed desire to stay with the team. Final AP College Football Top 25 dropped last night with national champions Ohio State, the Ohio State University, on top, and runners-up Notre Dame in second. Oregon finished third ahead of Texas. Penn State in top five. Georgia claimed sixth, followed by Arizona State, Boise State, Tennessee, and Indiana. SMU finished 12th, three spots ahead of ACC champion Clemson. And South Carolina checks in at 19. Tune in this afternoon, 5:30, as the Firm Paladins take on the VMI Keydets right here on the Fan Upstate.